Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, the Charleston Dungeon. It's housed prisoners of war. It's been the final resting place to hardened criminals. It has also been a place where political foes, for some, went to disappear. The Charleston Dungeon has one of the most horrific and intriguing stories of any structure still standing in historic Charleston. Today, the structure stands as a museum and a testament to a much darker time in our history. A time when pirates came off the sea, would frequent the town and its people. A time when lawlessness was a way of life. The big question is, do the spirits of that time still stand face to face with the living of those who visit the Charleston Dungeon today? Today, we talk with paranormal investigator Randy Johnson about the Charleston Dungeon.
The dungeon is probably the building in the city that has the richest history of all, because when the settlers arrived on ships, and we can imagine their faces being terrified, because they arrived here in this wilderness not knowing what they were facing, the first instinct they had was to build a wall. And the wall ran down East Bay Street in the old city, up to Trad, cut up Trad going west, and then cut up Meeting Street going north, and then cut back somewhere around the city market. And it encompassed a very narrow city pushed up against the river, the Cooper River. And on that wall, literally on it, they built what they called a court of guard, which was a constabulary or a guard station, where they kept several soldiers. And underneath it, on the very bottom level, they created a place to shackle people, to hold them until they could either be whipped and released or hanged. And that became known as the dungeon. And that's the main section underneath the exchange building. And then later, in the 1770s, when the city was still part of the British Empire, the citizens of the city and the British authorities decided to tear down the old court of guard and build a much more imposing edifice called the Exchange Building. But underneath, they left the dungeon. And so the dungeon goes back to the 1680s, and the newer building on top of it, newer, you know, relatively, goes back to the 1770s. It's a much more stately building. It's very imposing. You could see it from the harbor as you entered from the Atlantic Ocean. And it stood right on the wall where the dungeon was, and literally was built on top of it. So when you walk in the dungeon, the first thing that hits you is that you're on top of you. You see this beautiful vaulted ceiling made with a very elaborate brick bond. And that creates the ceiling of the dungeon now. And it's formidable. I mean, you walk in there and it's very intimidating because you feel oppressed, you feel pushed down. And that's where they continued to shackle people before they would whip them or hang them, until they finally built another jail in the city called the Old City Jail, which still stands as well, around 1802. But because of its timing, the dungeon is a place where Charlestonians shackled pirates like Stede Bonnet before they were hanged down at the Battery. And it's also the place where later, during the British occupation of Charleston during the Revolutionary War, this is where the British threw all of the, what they call traitors, the people who had supported the revolution. And so, in addition to a place where pirate ghosts haunt, we get a lot of Revolutionary War ghosts, including the ghost of Isaac Haynes, someone that all children read about in history books, a big hero during the revolution. So it's, you know, it's just rich with history.
Obviously, they were aware that the dungeon was there when they put the exchange building on top of it. Why did they want to keep the dungeon at that point?
Even in 1772, there wasn't much to the city. It wasn't a big city, and that was prime real estate, and it already had a very solid brick floor. It already had, you know, the shackles, the loops popping up out of the walls that were used to, you know, secure the prisoners to the walls. And I think it was just a matter of being efficient and expedient, you know. Why tear it down? Why tear that part down?
Mm-hmm.
Why not keep it? Use it. So it was just a matter of being, I think, efficient.
What would someone have to do to end up in the dungeon? Obviously, we have some of the more famous names that have been through there, but just the more typical, less noteworthy individual, what would you have to do to end up in there?
You would probably have to steal, but it would be more than just a casual, you know, flipping an apple off of a table at the market, you know, and throwing it in your pocket. You know, that probably wasn't enough to wind you in the dungeon. But if you committed any kind of serious theft, if you trespassed, you committed burglary, and, you know, back then, during the time it was a colony of Great Britain, you know, everything was covered by British law, and the other concept they would have held back then was this idea of the king's peace. The king's peace. If you breach the king's peace, if you disturb the king's peace, if you were disruptive in the streets, even, or if you committed libel, you know, if you slandered somebody, they could probably, or slandered the king, you know, they could throw you in there. There was, you know, a different concept of justice, because it had no grounding in a constitution. It was all based on British law.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty arbitrary, you know. And another thing about British law during that period of its history was what we had. There was a lot of arbitrariness to it, you know, and it was very much aimed at the poor. So if you were wealthy, you would probably never wind up in the dungeon, even if you committed a heinous crime. But if you were poor and had no resources, probably even small, simple crime, you could easily wind up in the dungeon and die because no one cared. And so there was a lot less respect for human rights, because again, you're not protected. That's why we have the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it, there were a lot of people in the dungeon who didn't belong there from our point of view. But from a British point of view back then, it was consistent with their idea of justice, because their whole point was to just impose authoritarian rule on a colonial people without any concern for their rights or their interests or any kind of fairness. And that's kind of how I see it. You know, it was a place where you would have wound up even if you just said the wrong words to a particular British official. You know, you could easily wind up in the dungeon. That's always how I've imagined. It's just right out of a movie.
Yeah. How long was the dungeon used? Up until what point in history was it functioning as this prison, if you will?
Off and on, I'd say until around 1802.
Okay. Now, obviously, it is still there today, and there's a large chunk of history where it was not used as the dungeon. What was its life after 1802, up until, you know, more modern day, where we got more curious about its history, and it was just there? What was going on with the dungeon and that space?
it's not pretty. In fact, I would say it's even more dark than the period when it was actually used as a jail, because after 1802, Charleston had a formal jail. You know, it's a four-story jail with large holding cells and torture rooms in the bottom. I mean, it was a full-service jail. But after 1802, what happened was the Exchange Building was called the Exchange because that's where Charlestonians went to do business. So in the upper floors of the Exchange, and again, it's a very stately, beautiful building, that's where Charlestonians entertained dignitaries. George Washington was entertained in the Exchange Building. There's a great hall on the top floor. And during his visit to Charleston in 1791, the city officials threw this big whirligig for him, and there were fireworks that were shot from barges out in the harbor, and he and his cohorts were stood in the windows on the top floor of the Exchange to watch this whole fanfare unfold. But it was also a place where Charlestonians, and we're talking about the top part, and then I'll get down to the bottom. And the top part, that was from the steps of the Exchange Building, is where Charlestonians first heard the Declaration of Independence being read publicly. It's also the first place where Charlestonians heard the Constitution being read out loud. And it was inside the Exchange Building that a legislative body ratified the U.S. Constitution to create the country. So, I mean, it's a stately building, but underneath what happened after the Revolution, and definitely after the official jail was constructed in 1802, was it just became a place where they stored things. I mean, they even used it occasionally for storing things before that. Charleston had a tea party, you know, right before the Revolution, and the tea that was seized wound up being stored underneath there, and a mob formed later and took it and used that tea to sell and raise money to support the war effort during the Revolution. So, you know, it saw different intermittent uses. But after 1802, when the jail was built, the dungeon became either a place where things were stored or a place where people were stored. But when I say that, and I want to be very, very sensitive here, we're talking about enslaved people. Because after the Revolution, and certainly after the jail was built, it became a place where enslaved people were held until they were brought out to an auction table, which used to stand on the north side of the building. And the elite Charlestonians would gather in crowds and bid on the enslaved people as they were brought out. Very unpleasant part of American history, but it's unfortunately what happened. And it's something I always deal with when I give historical tours, or even sometimes when I give ghost tours, because there are always ghosts there of slaves. We know slaves died in there under horrible conditions, and I like to celebrate their courage and their ability to make it through such horrible things, and yet I can't talk about them in any kind of specific way, because unfortunately during that time people didn't write about them. And they certainly weren't allowed to write about themselves. And most of them probably were illiterate and deliberately kept that way. So it's a gap in our history. And yet I like to at least allude to it just to give acknowledgement to these poor people who suffered so horribly. But so it was used for that. And then it was also used, again, like I said, I'm sure there were offices at times down there. There probably would have been U.S. custom officials and you look working down there, but certainly by the end of the Civil War, it wasn't used for much because the city was in decline, it had been bombarded, and so after the Civil War, after the era of slavery, the building, including the bottom floor, fell into horrible disrepair. And what's really fascinating is that during that time, and nobody knows much about it because no one was writing about that either. They were just trying to survive.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.